Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today we're reading from Canto 4, Chapter 30, Verse 16, the activities of the Pachetas. Apritaktamasilanam. Savisham vasumadhyama. Apritaktamasileyam. Uyatpatni apitasaya. Apritak, without differences. Dharma, occupation. Shilanam, whose character? Sarvesham, all. Va, of you. Sumadhyama, a girl whose waist is slender. Apritak, without differences. Dharma, occupation. Shila, well behaved. Iyam, this. Puyat, may she become. Patni, wife. Arpita asaya, fully surrendered. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. You brothers are all of the same nature, being devotees and obedient sons of your father. Similarly, that girl is also of the same type and is dedicated to all of you. Thus, both the girl and you, the sons of Prachina Brahishat, are on the same platform, being united on a common principle. Please repeat. You brothers are all of the same nature, being devotees and obedient sons of your father. Similarly, that girl is also of the same type and is dedicated to all of you. Thus both the girl and you, the sons of Prachina Brahishat, are on the same platform, being united on a common principle. Purport. According to Vedic principles, a woman cannot have many husbands, although a husband can have many wives. In special instances, however, it is found that a woman has more than one husband. Draupadi, for instance, was married to all of the 5 Pandava brothers. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead ordered all the sons of Prachina Brahishat to marry the one girl born of the great sage Khandu and Pramlocha. In special cases, a girl is allowed to marry more than one man, provided she is able to treat her husbands equally. This is not possible for an ordinary woman. Only one who is especially qualified can be allowed to marry more than one husband. In this age of Kali, to find such an equipoised woman is very difficult. Thus, according to scripture, Kalau Pancha Vivarajayat, in this age a woman is forbidden to marry her husband's brother. This system is still practiced in some of the hilly tracts of India. The Lord says, Aprithag Dharmashileyam Puhuyat Patni Arpitasyam. With the blessings of the Lord, all things are possible. The Lord especially blessed the girl to surrender equally to all brothers. Apritak dharma, meaning occupational duty without difference of purpose, is taught in Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is divided into 3 primary divisions, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. The word yoga means acting on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as confirmed by Bhagavad Gita 3.9. Yakya tat karmano nyatra lokayam karma bandana Tatatam Karmakanteya Mukta Sangha Samachara. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. Otherwise, work binds one to this material world. Therefore, O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction, and in that way, you will always remain unattached and free from bondage. One may act according to his own occupational duty, just to satisfy the Yajna Purusha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is called apritak dharma. Different limbs of the body may act in different ways, but the ultimate objective is to maintain the entire body. Similarly, if we work for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we will find that we satisfy everything. We should follow in the footsteps of the Prachetas, whose only aim was to satisfy the Supreme Lord. This is called apritak dharma. According to Bhagavad Gita 1866, Sarvadaman Prityagya Mamekam Saranam Raja. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. This is the advice of Lord Krishna. Our only aim should be to act in Krishna consciousness for the satisfaction of the Lord. This is oneness, or apritak dharma. Omagyana timinandasya gyanangina salakya chaksurumilitam yena tasmai sri gurave namaha. Namam Vishnupadaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gauravaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Earlier in this chapter, Lord Vishnu was glorifying the friendly behavior of the Prachetas toward one another, and now he's explaining the importance of the Prachetas and the wife being of the same nature, or as in the word-by-word translation, without difference. This friendship and being without difference is an important part of our spiritual life, especially in marriage relationships. And what does that mean, of the same nature or without difference? In the purport, Prabhupada gives two different explanations of the words apritak dharma. He says, in the beginning he says that apritak dharma, meaning occupational duty without difference of purpose. And then further on, he says, just to satisfy the Yajna Purusha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is called apritak dharma. The only aim of the Prachetas was to satisfy the Supreme Lord. So in principle, that is our oneness, that is our the same nature that we have. If we all aim to satisfy the Supreme Lord, then we are of the same nature. Obviously, we are of the same nature originally, because that is our eternal position, is being servants of the Spirit of the Supreme Lord. But if we can act in that way, then we can have friendships, we can have good relationships, and we can be without difference. So if we can live like that in a marriage, the way it is described here, why the sons of Prachinabhari, the Prachetas, should marry the daughter of Kandu and Pramlocha, it's because they were of the same nature. So if we can do that in a marriage, that is a great benefit to our marriage. There are some great examples of marriages in our scriptures. And the other day I was hearing the story of Dhanurdas. Dhanurdas was a disciple of Ramanujacharya. Many of you will probably know that story. One day there was a great procession of the deity Ranganath through the city. And Ramanujacharya and his Brahmachari disciples, they were all present. And Ramanujacharya noticed this one man, his name was Dhanurdas, and he was standing there in the procession with everybody else, and he was holding this umbrella over the head of this beautiful lady, a prostitute, and he only had eyes for her. He was just staring at her, and the whole procession was going by, and a beautiful deity of Ranganath was going by, and there was music, and there was ghee lamps offered. There were so many things going, happening, but he only had eyes for the lady next to him. And Ramanujacharya was quite amazed by that, and he felt great compassion for this man's obviously fallen condition. So he asked his disciples, please take this man to me. So the Brahmachari disciples went to the man and he said, please come, the great Ramanujacharya wants to speak with you. So he came and Ramanujacharya asked him, you know, what is happening? You know, you are there, Ranganath, the beautiful Ranganath is passing by and you are just staring at that woman. Ah, says the man, but this woman has the most beautiful eyes. You know, once I've looked at her lotus eyes, I can't look at anything else. Nothing is as beautiful as her lotus eyes. There's just nothing can interest me anymore. So Ramanujacharya, out of his great compassion, he told the man and he said, please come with me to the temple. So he took the man to see Ranganath in the temple. And he prayed to Ranganath to please help this man and to please show him his beauty. So when the man looked upon Ranganath, he was completely shocked by the beauty of the deity. And he told Ramanujacharya that now he's seen Ranganath. Nothing else can compare with that anymore. So Ramanujacharya told him also to take the beautiful lady to Ranganath. And he took her, and when she realized how completely devoted that man was now to Ranganath, she also surrendered to him. So they both surrendered to Ranganath. And they both became disciples of Ramanujacharya. And because they were so surrendered, they were very, very dear to Ramanujacharya. So dear that he would, you know, often visit them and he would talk with them a lot. And his Brahmachari disciples became a little bit envious. They actually became, not just a little bit, they became very envious. And they started complaining about the man and how, because the man was quite rich, so they got married and they had a beautiful house and his wife had beautiful jewelry. But basically they used all their money in the service of Ranganath. But as Brahmachari disciples, they were complaining, look at him, you know, we're so austere and we're living so simple in the temple and he's living so opulently, what is he actually doing? And then they started criticizing their spiritual master because, you know, he was giving too much attention, paying too much attention to those Grihastha disciples and, you know, and not to them. So Ramanujacharya wanted to teach them a lesson. So he at night, when they were all sleeping, he came into the, you know, they were all sleeping in one room on the ground, simple brahmacharis, and they came and he swapped their copans around and ripped little pieces of their copan. And so when they woke up the next morning, there was great commotion and they were all accusing each other and they were all fighting with each other. You know, you have ripped my copan and you have stolen my copan, and there was great, you know, there's a lot of hoo-ha going on over those little pieces of cloth, copans. So, and then afterwards he told them, okay, he said, you know, I think my disciple Dhanurdas, he's too attached to his home and his wealth and his wife. So I'm going to have to show, you know, how attached he is. So I will call him tonight, and then when his wife is already asleep, and then you go to his house and you sneak in, and while she's asleep, you take all her jewelry. So the Brahmachari disciples, they are ecstatic, finally he sees we're right, and that, you know, this Dhanurdas is wrong. So they were so happy to go there. So they went in there when Dhanurdas was gone and the wife was sleeping. So they very silently went up to her and very carefully took all the jewelry off her arms. And then at a certain point she started to move, she started to turn around. So they were scared and they ran away. And they went to Ramanujacharya and they gave him the jewelry. And he said, okay, now go back. I'll send Dhanurdas back, and you go back and see how attached he is, how he reacts to all this. So they went there, and they kind of peeped through the window, and when Dhanurdas came home, and the wife, you know, she explained to him, and she said, you know, our spiritual master must be in great difficulty because, you know, he sent his Brahmachari disciples to take our gold. And, you know, I tried to facilitate them, you know, they were taking all the gold of the one side, so I tried to turn over so they could take all the jewelry from the other side. But I must have been too quick, so I scared him off and he ran away. And Dhanurdas was so upset with her. He said, how can you do this? You know, this was our chance to serve our spiritual master. And you scared him off. So now we're going to have to suffer because, you know, just because you're not careful enough. And he was so upset with his wife and he was chastising her. So all the Brahmacharya disciples, they went back to Ramanujacharya and they told him this. And Ramanuja said, you see, who is really advanced here? Where people's attachment lie? You were fighting over pieces of cloth. And he is upset because he couldn't give all his wealth to me. Now who is attached here? So this is a great example about wonderful Grihastha life. We have some more examples. In the same lecture I was hearing about Shiva's Thakur, how Lord Chaitanya was having this great kirtan in his house, and during the kirtan, Shiva's Thakur's son was very ill and he left his body during the kirtan. And Shiva's Thakur, he told his wife and he told all the women of the family, I do not want you to lament. I do not want Lord Chaitanya to find out what has happened, because then it will disturb his kirtan and it will disturb his ecstasy. So they went on for hours, and Lord Chaitanya went on for hours having this kirtan, and nobody told him, nobody lamented, nobody did anything to disturb his kirtan. And then finally he kind of found out, like, there's something wrong here. You know, something has happened here. So he said it. He said, I feel there's something horrible has happened in this house. So, you know, I just feel it. And then, you know, Shiva Stakur said, no, everything is okay. Just go on with your kirtan. And then finally he said, no, there's something, I can feel it. There's something not right. So then the other devotees told him what had happened. And he said, when? When did he leave his body? And he said, well, earlier, you know, about 7 hours ago. So he was so incredibly pleased with Shiva Stakur. Because, you know, he at that point he said, how can I ever leave this devotee of mine? Of course, this was before he had taken sannyas, so everybody was wondering why he would say such a thing. But he was lamenting that he had to leave Shiva's Thakur when he was going to take sannyas and going to Jagannath Puri, which was, of course, something that he knew in advance. So this should be the nature of devotional service, and this should be the nature of husband and wife. You know, how best to serve the Lord, how best to serve the spiritual master. And this is also the first consideration when we choose a wife or husband. How is this person going to increase my attachment for Krishna and decrease my attachment for Maya? How is this person going to help me in my devotional service? It shouldn't be, oh, she's such a wonderful cook and she's going to make me such wonderful prasad. Or, you know, he's such a hard worker and he can provide so nicely for me. We have to take care that, you know, we have to trust that Krishna will take care of all that. If Krishna can take care of the needs of a huge elephant, then I'm sure he can take care of our needs in our Grihastha ashram. So we should, you know, choose a husband and a wife based on, well, the same principle as here in the text, based on the fact that, no, there is no difference, that we are of the same nature, that we both want to serve the Supreme Lord. And the same thing goes in the larger community, in our ISKCON temples. We are all here to serve Prabhupada, we're all here to serve Krishna. And the more we work together, and the more we, you know, the more we work together to achieve that common goal of pleasing Shishu Radha Gopinath, of pleasing Srila Prabhupada, the more there will be friendship and more the differences between us will disappear and a sweeter association will become. I heard another, sorry, I just got about 300 lectures of Radhanath Swami, so anything I speak somewhere comes from one of his lectures. He was telling us this story. He was describing how all the devotees in Vrindavan were cooperating to please Krishna. And then he's explaining how the sun is beating simply for the pleasure of Krishna. Now normally, he's explaining how summer in India, it's actually very unpleasant. People don't want to be in Vrindavan during summer. It's not a place to be. Even the local Brijbasis, they basically sleep during the day because it's not very nice. But there the sun is, you know, going as hot, making it as hot as possible for the pleasure of Krishna. Why? Because this will give all the other Brijbasis the opportunity, the chance to do some special service. And the waterfalls were flowing extra hard so they could splatter water and make this nice mist which was so cooling and refreshing. The river Yamuna was flowing very fast and very strong. And the lotus flowers, they were just blossoming just to create this very cool and fragrant atmosphere. And then the clouds in the sky, they were serving as umbrellas over the heads of Krishna and his friends. So actually Krishna and all the cowherd boys, they were not feeling the slightest discomfort in spite of the sun beating so hard. And it was like autumn for them, because everyone was just working together for the pleasure of Krishna. Even a more difficult the situation, the more they had the chance to blissfully do something nice for Krishna. And he goes on giving this explanation, and I really love this story about a little disaster that happened in New Vrindavan a long time ago when he was still a pujari himself. And he said there was the Lord Varaha's appearance day, and they were having this kirtan in the temple room, noon kirtan. And the ghee lamp had gone around, and then somebody had put the ghee lamp on the altar, and somewhere or other the ghee lamp touched the curtains, who were basically synthetic, so they went up in flames, and there was this huge fire, and everybody was panicking. And then this one devotee, he found this powder extinguisher, and he blasted the curtains and the whole altar, and a second extinguisher and a third extinguisher. And he emptied them all on the altar to extinguish the fire. Fire was very extinguished. But then when they looked, they saw that the deities, all the deities, and they had like, besides Radha Vrindavan Chandra, they had two other sets of Radha Krishna deities. They had three sets of Gauritai deities. They had two sets of Jagannath deities. They had this beautiful, they made their own jewelry, so this beautiful, intricate, filigree jewelry. The clothes, everything was covered in this thick layer of powder. Now, the powder from a fire extinguisher, I used to do that for my work. You know, you go and do these drills and you extinguish things. It becomes like this thick, compact layer. And it's sticky. It sticks to each other. And you can't just wipe it off. You can't wash it off either. The moment you touch it with water, it becomes even more sticky. And the whole altar, everything was covered in that stuff. And what to do? They had to clean the deities, and within minutes, there was the whole of New Vrindavan was standing in the temple room, and they were all busy. There was like three persons per deity trying to clean them, taking the clothes off, cleaning the jewelry. At the same time, and women, they were sewing new curtains. They had to bathe all the deities three or four times to make sure that everything was clean, and they were busy for 8 hours. Everybody was together. They were all busy for 8 hours. They forgot, because this was just before the feast, they forgot that they hadn't eaten. And he's explaining how incredibly blissful everyone was. And this was the greatest festival that they've ever had, because they were all united in one purpose, just to save the deities from this horrible situation they were in. And there was a question afterwards by one of his disciples, if it is like just in case, you know, if it's just in cases of emergency that this happens. And I don't remember exactly the answer that he was giving, but yeah, we shouldn't make it just in cases of emergency. I mean, in principle, we are united. We're all chanting Hare Krishna. We all have the same goal. We all want to go back home, back to Godhead. We all want to please Krishna. At least that's what should be our goal. So why should we have to wait for, you know, a big disaster like that to happen to actually become united? And unfortunately, in this material world, this often isn't the case. You know, there's often people opposing each other. You know, this kind of idea of let us cooperate to please God, to please the spiritual master. It's often more like, let me please Krishna, let me please the spiritual master, so he cannot see my service should be better than his service or her service. And it's like the two sons who are massaging the father's body, and they're both massaging one half of the body, and then they're trying to massage their own half very nicely, but then they quickly try and pinch on the other half. So the father will be pleased with them, but will be upset with their brother. And, you know, but ultimately, if they both do that, the father is just suffering. So if we just try and think of, you know, our own service to Krishna and how we can please Krishna and please him better than anyone else, please the spiritual master better than anyone else, then basically that defeats the purpose. If we want to reach that ultimate goal of becoming pure devotees, we have to have a relationship of friendship with others and overcome those differences. Because in spiritual life, in the spiritual world, there are no differences. Like that description that Radhana Maharaj gave of you know, the sun kind of helping everybody else to be able to serve Krishna. That is the atmosphere, that is the feeling in the spiritual world. So if we are trying to outserve everybody else, outshine everybody else, if we think in terms of friends or enemies, then we're so far removed from spiritual life, then we're so far removed from going back home, back to Godhead. So, but how can we overcome these differences? Because I was thinking about that yesterday when I was preparing this lecture, and it reminded me of a quote from Urmila Mataji, that real humility is to think, not to think less of yourself, but to think of yourself less. And it's something that I really liked. I really like that quote. It's like one of my favorites. And if we can do that, if we can actually think less of ourselves, then we can cooperate. Then we can overcome all the differences. If we can learn to first think of somebody else, of somebody else's needs, of somebody else's service, and then only of ourselves, then we will be able to create such a wonderful atmosphere in the temple that it can attract anybody. You know, anybody who comes to a temple will be attracted by such an atmosphere. And ultimately, that is what Srila Prabhupada wanted. Srila Prabhupada wanted these temples to be like little embassies of the spiritual world, where people come and they feel the atmosphere of the spiritual world, and they want to be there. And that is actually our duty to Srila Prabhupada, to create that atmosphere. We have so many visitors coming here. And if we can create that atmosphere, can you imagine if every single one of these visitors feels like this is such a special atmosphere and they want to come back? We will never have financial problems. That is, we can have mangoes every day for lunch if we do that. It's because everybody wants to come back then, and they want to be with the devotees. So, and if we do that, you know, we will also be more happy. I mean, how can we be happy if we're constantly thinking in terms of, you know, like and dislike, of you know, what we need, what not, what other people need. There's because we can never satisfy our needs. Needs cannot be satisfied. As soon as you satisfy one need, another will come up. So it's not a way to become happy. So it's the if we manage to cooperate, then that ultimate happiness that will be there also for us. Prabhupada is giving the example in the purport of the different limbs of the body, and they all do different things, but ultimately their aim is one, is to set it to maintain the body. Because when the body is maintained, then they are maintained. So the same should go for communities like this. And we all do different things, but the aim should be one, to serve Radha Gopinath and to serve Prabhupada. And like the limbs of the body, they'll suffer. You know, if the hand refuses to give food to the mouth, then the hand will suffer. And so we will suffer if we want to be independent. And this is a Kali Yuga mentality. It's something of this age. I mean, even now I can see the difference between when I joined 30 years ago. Now, when I joined 30 years ago, mentality was different. Nowadays, even in society, there's this very individualistic mentality. It wasn't, you know, it's becoming more and more prevalent. And that mentality is also visible in temples, unfortunately. It's all about me, and it's all about I. And, you know, we have so many more needs all the time. We need money. We need, you know, we need to go to India a few months out of the year. We need a private room. We need respect. We need so many things. But ultimately, what we really need is Krishna. What we really need is Krishna consciousness. And, you know, we can only get that when we fulfill Krishna's needs, not when we try and fulfill our own needs. And when we joined, that is something, I mean, every bhakta when he joins, normally that is something that they feel, especially in the beginning. You know, we feel that, you know, we want to be a devotee and we want to do the right thing. And then over the years, somewhere other maya sometimes gets a little bit more of a grip on us, and those other needs, they start creeping in. And that is why we have to chant and read and listen to Srimad Bhagavatam and associate with devotees. Because when we do that properly, then we can keep focusing on Krishna's needs and not on our own needs. And especially if we can learn to associate properly with devotees, if we can overcome the differences and can try and serve Krishna as, you know, in a unity, and if we can serve devotees. This is a trick that I learned over the past year, that the more I can engage myself in kind of, you know, doing things, you know, trying to think of other people's needs, then the less I have time for my own needs and the more happy I become. And it was actually kind of a revealing realization that, you know, you can still worry, but you worry about other people and then you don't get unhappy because of that. The worry is still there, but you can be happy. And the more we worry about ourselves, then the more unhappy we become. So if we can do that, we can live together in a temple and we can, you know, follow what Prabhupada has given us. You know, chant together, read together, listen to Srimad Bhagavatam together, go to kirtans together, serve Krishna together, and not just individualistically, then we will be happy and then we will be ready to go back home, to get back to Godhead. Because in the spiritual world there are so many devotees and they're all of the same nature and they're all dealing with each other in friendship in order to serve Krishna. So that is basically what we should be doing here. So are there any comments, any questions? Yes, please. Well, because exactly that, because we're worried about ourselves. If we constantly think of what we don't have, what we need, how can you be happy when you're constantly thinking of your needs? It's just not possible. You know, we live in I think it was Satchinanda Maharaj who explained that we live kind of in the past and the future all the time. So we have this thing of lamenting for things that we lost and this desiring for things that we want to have. And then when we're in that mentality, there's no happiness, there's no place for real happiness. You can be, you know, you can have this temporary satisfaction of getting something that you want, but that is not real happiness. That is just a bit of satisfaction. Okay, you know, I wanted this and now I have it, and then you look at it and then, you know, how long can you look at it? How long can you enjoy it? It's just very limited. So, but real happiness comes from something else. And so this is my personal experience. You know, it's a kind of, I discovered that because I'm kind of, I tend to be a little bit overly busy. The advantage of that is that I don't have time to worry because I just don't have time for it. And I realized that it's actually kind of a blessing. You know, as long as I manage to sleep a few hours a night, then that works. And it's just, it's my personal realization. So the philosophy behind it is a little bit difficult to explain, but yeah, as long as you're lamenting and hankering, then where is time for happiness? And that is what we do. As soon as we think about ourselves, we lament or we hanker. That's basically that. There's nothing else that we do. Because otherwise we think of serving Krishna, we think of serving the devotees. Yes? Yes. But then if we relate to ourselves as the servant of Krishna, then Krishna is still in the center. So then by extension, we're actually trying to serve Krishna. So there's the different mentality. Of course, to clarify that, when I think, say, thinking of ourselves, then it's just our personal needs are, you know, not in relation to Krishna. Of course, that is kind of, then we get into the whole shady area of which Krama Kanamraj always likes to kind of point at, you know, I need this nice car in the service of Krishna. So there's like a tricky thing there as well. So yeah, we need things to serve Krishna. But there's a big shady area there as well, where it kind of goes from serving Krishna to ultimate sense gratification, and there's a grey area in between where Yes. Yes. So if we go regularly to Srimad Bhagavatam class and we chant and we read and we associate with devotees, then that grey area is not that grey anymore, because then we can see where it stops and where our own personal sense gratification begins. Yes, please. That's nice, thank you. Thank you for that. Yeah, I that could have been a possibility. Fortunately, it wasn't in this case. Anything else? Yes, please. If somebody has that mentality, that's a very unfortunate person. I mean, I can't say anything about that. I mean, that is a very unfortunate situation. If you see devotees, if you can't possibly see devotees as enemies, then you're incredibly unfortunate. I mean, we should feel sorry for somebody like that. It's not much else I can say about that. It's so far removed from anything that we learn, and it's such a lack of understanding of Krishna consciousness and of Vaishnava behavior that, yeah, I'm sorry, I can only say I feel very sorry for the person. Sorry, I have nothing else sane that I could possibly say about that. If anybody else has a comment on that, be my guest. I must admit, I know the situation. We had discussed it in the past, so I don't want to get into this too much. Gets too personal. Anything else? Okay. Grantvachimit Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai.